Here, and you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
I'm Dime Roberts, Stage and Studio. You're listening to music by guitarist and singer Parfait Basalay. Basalay weaves joyous guitar melodies with his intricate vocals. As an immigrant originally from West Africa, he often sings about his experiences and his reflections on issues of peace and about his daily life. We also feature the Tongan Sewing Circle of women who sing beautiful songs in harmony. And in the latter part of the show, we'll feature Dilip Sunar, a Bhutanese refugee who writes about his journey from Bhutan to Nepal to Oregon. That's all part of the Migrations Arts Project, funded by the Regional Arts and Culture Council. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio.
Something my fears couldn't tame, so I could keep up with this ride. Some my life I could sacrifice. You showed me something much more than fame, but yet could heal me from my shame. Something my pride couldn't claim, so I could keep up with this fight. So I could stick around.
I'm Dime Roberts. Parfait Basalay moved around a lot when he was a youth in West Africa. He often felt ostracized as a foreigner with each new move. That's one of the reasons he turned to music as a creative way to express his frustrations with the outside world. When he came to America to go to college and pursue a music career, his music continued to reflect on immigrant life and dreams. I had a chance to talk with Parfait Basalay in my office studio. I asked him about his early life in West Africa.
My dad used to work for an overseas company, and he himself is originally from Benin Republic, which is a very small country in West Africa. So that's where I was born, and so within the context of his work, he moved quite a bit on that West African coast. So we lived in Niger, also known as Niger, and then we lived in Senegal. So those are the two places where I mostly grew up in my early years before making the big move to the United States after graduating from high school.
And how many languages do you speak?
Well, you know, with so many years overseas now, I think that the number of languages are shrinking. But I will say roughly about three languages at this point, you know, English, French, and some Wolof, which is the most spoken language in Senegal.
So you were 13 and you moved around. When did you come to the U.S.?
So actually, I moved to the U.S. Age 19. After I graduated from high school, I wanted to come and study at the university. So that's when I decided to move to Portland, Oregon. And I've been here since.
I'm curious how one decides to move to Portland, Oregon from Benin.
So actually, that would have been from actually Senegal. So
how does one move from move to Portland, Oregon from Senegal?
So in my case, it was very, very interesting because my older brother was the pioneer in this whole move to the United States. He's 2 years older than me. So when he was the one initially who had that dream to, I really want to go to the USA to study. And we had a family friend who actually lived here in Portland, Oregon. He's a local artist, Mr. Wage, some might know him. Yes, so...
Baba Wage?
Exactly. And so he lived in Portland and our families knew each other. So it made perfect sense for my older brother to come and have some connection here. And so after that, 2 years later, when I graduated, it also made natural sense that I would come because my older brother was here. And one thing after another, my younger brother also followed afterwards. And we have a little small community of us here in Portland.
I'm wondering, what was the reception like for you when you came here?
It was challenging in many ways. The weather was one thing, the gray and rainy weather in Portland. So that was one of the hardest things initially. And then you have, obviously, the culture, the humor, and being able to connect at first. But then gradually, it's been over 14 years now that I've been here, and gradually it's grown. It's grown on me. I consider Portland home now in many ways, having built some very good relationships and built my own family here as well. And then the second angle of that reception would be obviously the host nation. And, you know, I have had, all things considered, a very positive experience. Obviously, human experience is so wide in kind of different people you deal with. So there's been some challenges here and there, but for the most part, Portland has been a very, very welcoming place to come to.
Is there ever sort of an explanation you have to do, I guess, in the difference between from being an African national and then African American?
Totally. There's definitely a nuance there in just the experience altogether, having grown up in Africa where, you know, issues of race and the very heavy history of, you know, discrimination wasn't my experience. It wasn't the narrative at the coffee table or at the dinner table. So just from that perspective, experiencing some of my encounters here in the United States were different than my counterpart, you know, African Americans. But it wasn't so much of an issue in terms of being able to connect with people. I think with African Americans, I've been able to, you know, build some very good relationships and being able to have some very rich conversations about what are some of those differences growing up in Africa and then versus growing up here. And there was a lot of learning on both ways, both directions, that some learning that has taken place, me getting some insight about what that is to have lived here in America with that history and what that does to one psyche and one outlook versus, you know, me coming from West Africa as well. But all of it is just very fascinating to see the human experience, how what you've gone through or what your ancestors have gone through, how that influences your outlook about life.
What would you think stands out for an immigrant artist?
You know, that's a very, very good question. And the first thing that comes to mind, Dime, would be I would see, first and foremost, as an artist, the shared mission as an artist, obviously, is I really believe in engaged art. So art that is being used as an agent for either social transformation or to denounce some of the ills of society. And but as an immigrant, I think the added layer or dimension there is that you maybe serve also as a translator of cultures, just from the perspective of having seen and experienced something else and coming into a new context, you have a different perspective. And so being able to walk that line and speaking for both cultures and being also a voice for other realities that maybe the host nation doesn't know about or hasn't experienced, and vice versa, being able to be that translator for the host nation into people from your community that you've come from, so that there's a little bit more understanding. So being that bridge between cultures will be the main thing I would highlight as being the differentiating characteristic of an immigrant artist.
Is that your mission?
It definitely is. Using music as a way to bridge through differences and cultures and religions is really something I'm extremely passionate about. And so when I write songs, that's really something is on the forefront of my mind. The project, which I have named the Colombe Project, Colombe standing for dove in French, and it's the idea of conveying the concept of peace project, because the dove is a worldwide known symbol of peace. And so what I do is I build on original songs that are written based on either personal narrative or real people's narrative of trying to fit in or having struggle with issues of integration or discrimination, you name it. And so writing songs around those characters, and then designing workshops where I share those songs, share the narrative piece, the story piece with the audience, and then asking them very specific and targeted questions to get them to think about how other people's experiences affect them emotionally, and also how they can relate to those stories. Because in the end, you know, our stories are very similar, even though different, the human experience is very similar. So that's, in a nutshell, what I do. I go into the classrooms, have those workshops, and engage into some very, very transformational conversation with students as they journey along someone else's story.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Demia Roberts talking with Parfait Basile, West African singer and musician. You can find out more about our guest at parfaitonline.com or stageandstudio.org, where I have all that info as well as this interview. At George Middle School in North Portland, a group of women ages 30 to 80 meet weekly around long tables in a large classroom. On this day, there are close to 18 women with their kids. Most of the women are hand-stitching various quilts in colorful patterns that reach out like sun rays. One of the women, Kato Kakala Kavapalu, a widowed mother of three children, is an expert hand on the sewing machine. She serves as the instructor for the sewing circle.
Yeah, there's more about 20 quilts today, and different colors and different patterns. And I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10... 11 people, maybe they have two pieces.
When I asked if the women could sing, they all broke out in a Tongan song in beautiful harmonies, with Kavapalu taking the lead while still running the sewing machine. Many of the women have their children there. Used to the sound of their mother singing, they draw, do homework, or play with blocks in a corner of the classroom. But they still listen.
What was that song that you just
heard? You know, sometimes when we are in a youth, In the youth, we just play around with the chicken. And the song, we're trying to get the chicken and follow the chicken. That's the song that we use to get more chicken. But anyway, I finished my dress.
It seems this is one way the kids can stay in touch with their Tonkin culture and language. When prompted, they can sing many of the songs themselves.
Yeah. Utte armas jättimele jolla. Peitä vaiva on kamalua fiatti. Ohan on mulle huokkana fiatti. Oja uele, lama
Kavapalo told me she learned music as a young child listening to older women singing while doing their work.
And you know how to sing because over there is a group of older women. They do some making a tapa and they sit in one of the hall and they sing while they're doing their work. And we just know it from the neighbors and friends there. And also in our church, we just have to start the hymn and we follow them in our home, in families, in church, in school. My kids in here learn how to do it, and they play guitar and ukulele and piano, and they learn. But in Tonga, you can do singing without anything, any instrument.
It's been a long time since most of the women in the sewing circle emigrated from Tonga. Kavapalu and her husband came to Oregon in 1987 to raise their three girls and give them a good education. Because the Tonkin constitutional monarchy has made education free and mandatory for all citizens, people there have a nearly 99% literacy rate. Quite often, Tongans come here with their school-aged children because they want them to go to college.
Everybody is here for economic reason, and that's part of the reason why I started the sewing class, so the family can save money by making their own clothing for their children and for themselves.
Kolini Fuzitua is an academic achievement specialist for ERCO and the Asian Family Center. He started the sewing circle in 2012 as a way not only to help out the families economically, but also to connect them with the school system. The group meets at different schools so the women can become comfortable with the building and the staff. He says the children who come with their moms get to hear stories about Tonga. The circle also exchanges current events within the Tongan community. Fuzitua says they've learned in America parents have to actively work with the teachers and the school to make sure their kids get a good education.
But the only thing different between here and Tonga, the support system is different here. And the reason to starting up the sewing class, in addition to keeping our culture and helping the family economic-wise, is to have the parent feel comfortable with the building, the school building, comfortable with the staff, and then just comfortable being here. And that's why I have it in the school setting. We've had parents volunteering in school, become president or vice president of PTA. One of my parents was picked by Portland Public School as one of the volunteer of the year.
Fuzitua says education is a Tongan parent's top priority because in Tonga, it's the whole community's responsibility for kids to stay in school.
You have the school system, you have the teachers, and you have your parent, you know, watching over you, make sure that you get to school. But not only that, children do not, you know, like here in America, skip school and cutting school because they have nowhere to go. If you're seen out in public, people can tell because everybody's in their uniform. Whoever's driving by or walking by will grab you by the collar and walk you back to school or throw you in their car, throw you in their canoe and paddle you back to school and throw you back in class.
And because Tonkans cherish education, many families have to go overseas to find employment so they can afford to send their children to college. Fuzitua's own parents immigrated to America in 1975 when he was 9 years old. After he completed his college degree, his parents moved back to Tonga to retire. Now he sends money back home to help his parents. In fact, Tonga's economy relies on financial remittances from family members who make up more than 50% of the population who are spread out in other parts of the world. The Tongan community is also spread out in the Northwest. Having the sewing circle in Portland is a way to connect the families.
Last week there was a funeral and then the class was canceled because nobody's going to show up to class because everybody's going to the funeral. When we have a festive event, for example, a wedding or a birthday, everybody will show up, and there's no invitation needed. As long as you hear there's something going on, you show up.
While they may have this community support system, many still have low incomes and face health dangers because of American fast food and what Fusitua calls a generally starchy Tongan diet. Many Tongans in Tonga and in America are obese, and 1 in 4 develop diabetes. And moms like Kavapalu, who works as a certified nursing assistant while caring for her elderly mother, find it too expensive to buy healthier foods for her 3 children.
In Tonga, you walk over there, but over here, you just get up and then get in the car and then drive. Our food here is very expensive. It's okay, but we are not feeling satisfied with the food that we used to. We have taro root, taro leaves, fish. In Tonga, they grow their own food. Over here, because of the season, we can't grow crops here. Right now, there is more Tongan family struggle with financially, mostly for kids' expenses at school, and not only that, for their home, utility bills, and some money for food. But we'll try to manage our little money that we have so we can have healthy food.
Kato Kakala Kavapalu cherishes the community kinship she gets from the sewing circle, singing with the women as they work, and making beautiful quilts. She considers sewing an art form the women have learned from their elders before.
Oh, we consider it's artistic. And that's all. We have art at school, and those things, it's really very artistic and using our talent. It's a kind of part of art. I think if we still get together for like a couple of years, we'll be stay. We pass it from our generation to the next generation. The more we stay together, the more we happier. Most of us, we did not know how to do sewing. We did not know how to do quilt. But the first time we just get together and talk, and then we get together for sewing, and now we accept those everything that we learned from some other people they know better than us.
I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio. About 2,500 Bhutanese refugees currently live in Oregon. What I learned from this migrations arts project that I've been working on is some Bhutanese history. It seems that in 1985, the King of Bhutan imposed a Citizenship Act, which enforced a single national culture for the entire country. It required Bhutanese who were culturally Nepalese to change their clothing, language, and cultural traditions. The government also tightened its citizenship laws. As a result, Bhutanese people of Nepali ethnicity, many of whom had lived there for several generations, were declared illegal immigrants, and nearly 1/6 of the population, or about 100,000 people, were expelled and ended up in refugee camps in Nepal. Dilip Sunar was a postman in Bhutan when he began experiencing harassment at work, and then he, his wife, and his 8 children began experiencing persecution by the army. His family became one of the 100,000 Bhutanese who were forced to take refuge in Nepal. Sunar and his family lived in little shacks without running water or much medical care until 2009. He took odd jobs and was hired to build a schoolhouse, but on the job he fell from the roof and broke his hip. Despite 4 surgeries, it's never healed right, and he still uses a walker to get around. One of the things that's given him joy is discovering how much he loves writing poetry, as he tells me through his interpreter, Suprina Koirala.
कविता अब त्यस्तै अब भुटानमा बसेको नेपालमा शिविरमा बसेको त्यस्तै कोही कोही बेला अब याद आउँछ अनि हुन त म त्यति साह्रो बेसी लेखा पढा मान्छे होइन अब मेरो कवितामा त्यति अब शैली ग्रामर मिलेको छ हुँदैन तर तै पनि अब आफ्नो वेदना
I'm not very educated, and I can't like go out and speak in English and stuff. So I just stay home and think about the days I've spent in Bhutan and Nepal, and I just like stay and write. But it's not my poetry is not perfect like other poets, but I kind of write because I'm passionate about it, and I like it makes me feel good when I write and remember those days.
Dilip Sunar writes mostly about the homeland, his house and lands he lost, and his life at the refugee camp. Here is a short poem charting Dilip Sunar's journey from the refugee camp to Oregon.
Bhutan desh bata prithak bhayeko.
I left Bhutan and went to Nepal.
Hami Bhutani Nepali haru sansar bhariyeko.
Us Bhutanese Nepalese are surrounded all over the country.
Bhutani Nepali haruले भुटान देश बनाएको
Bhutanese Nepalese helped made the country the Bhutan
अन्तमा भुटानी प्रशासनले भुटानी नेपाली खेदेको
and later even the king and queen wanted us to escape from Bhutan
कसैको श्रीमान मारिए कसैको छोरा
some woman's husband were killed and some woman's and men's son were killed
कसैको छोरी बुहारी बलात्कृत भए
others daughter and daughter-in-laws were raped
छोड्नु पर्यो सबै मायामारी घरबार
we had to leave our birthplace our home
भागी आयौं भुटानी नेपाली नेपाल भूमिमा
we left Bhutan and came to Nepal
19 वर्ष बस्यौं पूर्वी नेपालको सात शिविरमा
and lived in Nepal as a refugee in 7 different camps
आफ्नो देश छोड्न लेखिएछ हाम्रो तकदीरमा
our fate was written and we had to leave our own country and come to different country
उराट लाग्यो नौलो लाग्यो हामीलाई नयाँ ठाउँमा
it was weird it was very strange to live in someone else's country
छाडी आयौ दुःख लाग्छ आफू जन्मेको गाउँ
I still feel very sad when I talk about leaving my country and going far away.
Je jasto bhaye pani shibirma basyau.
Whatever the hardship was, we stayed in a refugee camp as a refugee.
Dukha sukha bhaye pani bachna lai kammar kasyau.
Even though it was very hard to live, we had courage and we lived as a refugee.
Shibir ko basai sarai dukha khatiyo.
Refugee life was very hard.
पानी चुन्थ्यो हावा चल्थ्यो छाना उडाई लान्थ्यो
it was sometimes the wind used to take our roof away it was very windy the water used to drip in our huts
रहँदै बस्दै जाँदा खेरि अमेरिका आयौ
and we lived for about 19 years and finally came to America
दुख सुख र आनन्दसँग जीवन बिताउन पायौ
now the life is better and we are living here happily peaceful life in America
thank you
Dilip Sunar reading a poem with his interpreter Suprina Koirala the Migrations Arts Project it features some of the artists this last year on stage and studio including the Tongan Sewing Circle of women who sing beautiful songs in harmony we also featured the poetry of Palestinian writer Mohammed Bader and Bhutanese writer Moti Rizal for more info visit facebook.com/migrationsarts. You can also visit stageandstudio.org where I have all this information. The Migrations Arts Project was funded by the Regional Arts and Culture Council. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org as well as the podcast on iTunes. You can like us on facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts. Let's go out with more music by Parfait Vasile at parfaitonline.com.
I've tried to win a prize so much less than you are. It is time I rise from the depth of this selfish path. See these tears in my eyes. The screaming. I'm
much more than these things I was stressing out for. I am loved and I'm a son in the blood of the selfless Savior. Now I know I'm worth much more than these things I was stressing out for. I am loved and I'm a son in the blood of the selfless Savior.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Andy Wawo looks a scream at him on my woe. Andy Wawo, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Thomas Orr. His show, Transitory Refuge and Other Questions, is on now at Eutectic Gallery, 1930 Northeast Oregon Street. Thanks for doing Art Focus, Thomas.
You're welcome, Joseph. It's my pleasure.
This show, I would say it's conceptual art, really. I mean, you walk in, you're confronted by nine big rectangles hanging from wires from the ceiling, and they're all slightly curved, but they are ceramic. They're rock-hard clay, and they're white. And then down one side there are five large pieces of scrim, so white fabric, very thin, transparent almost.